the Drown Rat Studios. You're listening to the Justice Speaks Up podcast, coming to you from everywhere and nowhere. Tipping the scales of justice with untold stories of American families. And now, Justice Speaks Up.
Justice Speaks Up is not a standard format podcast. You are listening to unscripted phone interviews for the purpose of documenting an ongoing open source human rights investigation into federally funded child abduction via collaboration between the U.S. Family Court and Child Protective Services. This often includes constructive parent and child estrangement on behalf of these agencies. This project is tracking the untold stories of U.S. families and conducting statistical research on behalf of this civil society in order to create solutions to a very important branch of the U.S. justice system that is statistically failing families and children. It's violating due process, violating constitutional violations, domestic terrorism, unlawful intimidation and surveillance of U.S. citizens. It's also conducting violations of the Violence Against Women Act by refusing to acknowledge the crimes committed against them in family court and in CPS custody cases. They're falsifying information in a federal, not all the time, but sometimes it's rare when it happens, but they're falsifying information in federal individual education programs for special needs children, forcibly medicating minors. Lying and falsification of evidence is often at play. They're often violating American Disabilities Act, human rights violations, and due to these failures, they are contributing to U.S. poverty levels, homelessness, mental health dilemmas, addiction, and all of these are a detriment to the entrepreneur and small business community by crushing many of these parents who own and many now are not operating startups. If you know any families that have been that may meet the criteria for this study, please have them email their participation request via the contact form on our website at justicespeaksup.us. Justice Speaks Up is also seeking to interview candidates who are running for government office, and we would love to discuss any areas in regards to their platform for reforming these entities and advocating for children and their families. In turn, we are also seeking anyone currently in these political seats to reach out to Justice Speaks Up via the same contact form to offer your input into this research study and to lend insight into for your constituents so that they can get answers. They've been left in the dark for many decades seeking answers to the areas that we are researching. Justice Speaks Up is conducting this research as a means to create a peaceful, long-lasting solution between U.S. families and these entities because we identify this as a U.S. crisis. I am requesting that listeners use their best judgment and not allow children under 18 to be present when you listen to these interviews.
Hi, this is Archer Sierra, and you're listening to the Justice Speaks Up podcast. I am on the phone with Ryan Swindle out of Mesa, Arizona, who is a transgender father of three. Ryan, thank you for joining me today.
Thank you.
All right, so Ryan, why don't you go ahead and start where we always like to start, which is at the beginning and how CPS originally got, how your family became, you know, involved with CPS.
Sure. Back in 2007, I allowed my cousin to come live with me and his kids and his wife, and the mother was very much abusive. I allowed them into my home. The mother was abusing both kids. The little girl, she ricocheted her head off the faucet, broke my bathroom spout. The little boy, she slammed into the wall, bloodied his face all over the wall. Just multiple incidents. It wasn't only traumatizing to me, it was traumatizing to mine and my girlfriend's personal kids. So I became very defensive over the kids. I became very protective. After about, I'd say about 8 months of just this constant trauma and everything, I woke up one morning to Austin screaming. He's now 12 years old. He was four at the time. and him screaming, Uncle Ryan, Daddy, Uncle Ryan, Daddy, and that's what he called me, is Uncle Ryan, Daddy. And I got up, and I'm like, what's wrong, Austin? And he's like, I'm hurt, and he had blood on his face. And I was like, Austin, who did this? And he goes, my mommy says my daddy did it. And I said, Austin, who did this? And he kept insisting his mom said his daddy did it. So I said, I pulled the mom to the side. I was really hostile, really upset, really, I'm going to beat the living crap out of this lady. And so she kept telling me, no, Boone did it. And Boone is my cousin, and he went to work. He left my house about 6:30. The kids were up about, I'd say it was about 7:38 when he started screaming. And so I went after her, and she called the police and reported that my cousin injured him. My cousin didn't injure him. She injured him. So they go and they arrest my cousin, and it wasn't nice. And my cousin got arrested over it, and he's now a felon for felony child abuse. And we get CPS involved. Well, she's in our home, you know, CPS, I figured, you know, CPS is kind of a safeguard. I really didn't like him being in my home because I have children myself. But I let it happen to keep the kids in the home. CPS told us to get a restraining order. We got a restraining order against Dad. They didn't properly, the police nor CPS properly investigated who was abusing his kid. So about, I would say about maybe a month, because the mom was failing, wasn't even here. I was had the kids to myself. They'd been without medical care, without all kinds of things for a long time. And I went to the courthouse and I filed for guardianship of them. And the judge granted it because she called my cousin in jail and asked my cousin, do you want your cousin to have guardianship of your kids? And he said, yeah. My mom also agreed to it because she came over to our house. And we had a court hearing, and I said, you're going to this court hearing because I can't do nothing with these kids. I've got to get them in school. I've got to get them medical. I've got to, you know, get them, you know, evals to make sure they're in getting what they need. And she went to court, and she signed off on the guardianship. So we're going through, you know, we're doing fine. CPS steps out. In fact, Lindsay Galvin came over for a visit one time and asked me if the mother, Lynn Burks, was here. And I said, no, she's not here. I have guardianship of the kids. And she's the one who told me to file for adoption of the kids.
The CPS worker did?
Yes, the CPS worker did. So I got a hold of I guess she's kind of like an advocate. She helped me for the court things and stuff like that. And we paid her to help us get all the adoption paperwork filled out and, you know, help us find a home study place. Is that what it's called? So they could come in and study our home so that we could get that, so we could submit it to the court, so we could go through the adoption.
Yeah, home study.
No problem. I wanted to keep the kids safe. So, you know, once I got the guardianship, I went down, I got Medicaid for the kids so that would help out with, you know, they had massive dental work. They had, the little girl needed glasses. They had not been kept up date with their shots. They had, you know, the little girl wasn't in school yet. Well, she's supposed to be in school, but she wasn't. So, at that point, the little girl started producing some strange behavior, and I call it dry humping my Austin. So I talked to my girlfriend and said, what do we need to do? Because I know that, you know, we need to help these kids. And my girlfriend goes, they are your family, and you love them dearly like they're your own kids, so let's get them some counseling. She goes, when you go, you need to tell the counselor what's going on. So I go in to the counselor. I tell the counselor what happened at the house and what Cheyenne had told my girlfriend and myself. She reported to CPS. Next thing I know, I'm getting a phone call by a Mesa, Arizona detective asking me to bring the kids in for questioning. Well, I was very hesitant to do it. And mainly from prior experience. And so my girlfriend goes, no, it'll be fine. They'll give the kids back to you because you're not the one that's abusing them, blah, blah, blah. And she convinces me to go. And my gut was telling me not to go. Make them get a warrant. But my girlfriend was saying, no, just do it because you want to look like you're cooperating. So I went and did it, and they served me that day with it. they said that I was abusing and neglecting the kids on the paperwork. But their true concerns, once we got to the TPRN in the meeting, was supposedly that I was manipulating and coercing the children.
How long had they been how long had they been in your care at that point?
Both kids had been off and on in my care Cheyenne for 6 years off and on, and Austin for 4 years off and on in my care.
How long did this occur after the guardianship was granted?
About 3 months.
Got it.
But Lindsay Galvin knew I had guardianship of these kids. She knew I was getting medical for them. She knew all these things. So when we went to the TPRN, because I'd already filed for the first part of the adoption of them, because, you know, I personally am not getting someone that's abusing children. This is my family. I don't want to bury them. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So we go to, like I said, we went to that TPR, and oh my God, I have documentation of how wonderful I am for these kids. You know, I'm getting the schooling, I'm doing the medical, they have YMCA membership. Austin's getting ready to go to developmental preschool because he was diagnosed with Asperger's. I got that done. You know, Cheyenne had her glasses. She was going to school constantly. She was clean. She was well kept. She was fed. She was healthy. She was all these wonderful things about me.
So you were picking up the pieces pretty much, right?
Pretty much. We were giving them the stability that they had never had.
I commend you on that.
They had been in our home for about a year and a half. That's including with the guardianship and before the guardianship. So they were very familiar. The kids knew the routine in our house. They knew, what they had to do. They all had little chores they had to do. Austin, I was homeschooling beginning kind of because he was a little slow. So that was like a major, we're going to get the kids back because they're praising me, right?
What do you mean get them back? Wait. Hold on. Slow down. What do you mean get them back? At this point?
They're in CPS custody at this point. The CPS workers walk in there. They're saying, oh, no, he's excellent with the kids. We've been seeing him interact, blah, 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 and the TPRN or the TPR. And
Ryan, hold on a second. There's something, we're missing a part here. You're saying the kids were in your care for a year and a half and that the guardianship was granted for 3 months. And then.
Yeah, prior to them pulling them.
Okay, so the counselor files a CPS report. You're called in by the Mesa detective and you're served papers for abuse. Which is not supported by the evidence of the home study. And then on what grounds did they remove the children and how quickly after guardianship was granted did that happen?
3 months exactly after the guardianship was granted. And what was the other question?
The grounds, I guess, is abuse.
They said that, abuse and I was being neglectful.
You're
that's
kidding.
Not what they said in the that's what they said. But that's not what's in the TPRN. So we're in the meeting. They call the dad who's sitting in jail on the TPRN. And the dad, they said, your cousin has your kids. And he's like, yeah, put them back. He doesn't hurt them. He loves them as if they were his own children. You don't know what you're doing by taking these kids from them. Put them back. They're fine. I'm not going near the house. I'm not bothering them. Put my children back. This is the biological father that's screaming, put his kids back. And the mother says the same thing. Put them back. He's not hurting them. So right in that meeting with my cousin, even on the phone, sitting in jail, and the mother, and we had two witnesses, my girlfriend's friends were there, and those two witnesses heard the CPS worker threaten me that if I didn't give up my guardianship to CPS, that they were going to take my children.
No.
Yes. I have written statements that are notarized by these people that they witnessed this.
Well, unfortunately, from my experience, affidavits don't mean shit in family court. This is horrible. I'm so sorry, but carry on.
So we go to the first court hearing, and I don't remember the judge's name. I can look it up, though. But the judge was super nice. It was a female judge, and we walked in there, and the judge goes, "You haven't had a CPS case in many years. You know, you've been involved with these kids that can see in the records for all their lives." And she looks at CPS, and she goes, "What's the allegations?" And they're all abuse and neglect. And she goes, "No. Do you have any evidence of Ryan abusing them?" They're like, "No." And she goes, "From what the report I'm reading here, you guys all say he's good for these kids. Why do we have them?" That was the judge's statement. So they got their butts ringed. They were allowed to keep them for one more month. That's all the judge gave them, is 1 month to keep these kids. And they got their butts ringed in the courtroom by the judge, and we walked out, and we're standing there with my attorney at the time, my wife, and two other people that were there, that, you know, my girlfriend's friends, and they turned around, walked right up to me, Lindsay Galvin and the other investigative worker. I don't remember the other investigative worker's name, but Lindsay Galvin walks right up to me and goes, "I'm coming for your fucking kids."
Okay.
So the judge orders visitations for us every day of the week for these kids.
Did you think to walk back in to the court and explain to the judge what happened and ask for a restraining order against CPS for threats?
Well, I asked my attorney that was standing there, and he's like, "Well, if they come after your son, you know, you have all these witnesses that said it, and this judge isn't going to put up with that." So I thought, I was taking the advice of my attorney. So I didn't think anything about it. And because, you know, my attorney said, you know, just get everybody to write out their notarized statements about this and we'll be good. So we're going along, you know, we're going at probably about, I would say, 3 visits in. At that point, I've homeschooled my children off and on, my son, Josh is his name, and I've homeschooled him off and on all his life because of his disabilities.
Okay.
And the school not wanting to accommodate. And so I went and pulled it after that threat. That became a very vital threat. For me, especially, you know, you're threatening to take my children. You know what I'm saying?
Yep.
And so I went and pulled him out of school, and I got all the home, me and my girlfriend went out and got all the homeschooling books so I could start teaching them at home. Because you threatened me. Now I'm scared. You know what I'm saying? So I'm at a visit with Cheyenne and Austin. He's 15 years old. I left him at the house. I told him, "Lock all the doors. And no matter what, don't answer the door, because this is a threat on my family."
Yep.
Josh is very well aware that this CPS worker threatened our family. So I'm at the visit, and So the first visit I go to, Austin comes in with the foster family. Austin comes running through everybody in the waiting room at CPS was in total tears. He comes running through the door, and the foster family's trying to catch up with him, and he just bails into my arms, and he goes, "Uncle Ryan, Daddy, I love you, I miss you, can I come home?" I will never forget that day, because I had the light in his face. I told him, "I'm going to get you home soon." At the time, I believed I could get him home. You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
And he's all, "Please bring me home, please." And I said, "Aren't these nice people?" Well, these foster family was very nice. And the CPS worked because the foster family brought up their concerns. This kid is attached to me. It doesn't look like I've ever abused him. At all. I never have. And so the CPS worker and the foster family are now in an argument in the waiting room because this kid did that. So now I got another thing against me because now I'm pissing off CPS by what the foster family sees. You see what's going on here? This is it was horrible.
Hold on. So these visits are happening over the 1 month that the judge allowed them to continue to have them. So as that 30 days is ticking after the court date, you're getting visits with the kids every week.
So Correct. Well, actually, we're supposed to get them every day.
Okay.
5 days a week, we are supposed to get visitations.
Did you get all of your visits?
I got the first 2 weeks of them, and then I'll lead into that. Anyway, so every time I'd go in for visits, every day, Austin would come barreling into my arms every time, begging me to come home. He didn't like his foster family, but he wanted to come home. And Cheyenne, I think probably the eighth visit that I went in on, Cheyenne was like, I want to come home. And she said it right in front of the person that supervises the visit. So on the 10th visit that I had with the kids, I'm in the visit, and the person that supervises the visit comes in and goes, where's your son? I'm like, with friends. And she's like, Lily, well, can you tell us where he is? And I'm like, no. And the next thing I know, I'm getting a phone call. So I get the call, and the person that's supervising the business goes, well, who's that? I'm like, oh, it's just a friend talking to me about my son. And she goes, well, I said, can I step outside? So I stepped outside, and I came back in, and I said, I need to go. My cousin needs me, today there's an emergency. I need to go. So in the process of this phone call, my son tells me that there's a SWAT team outside and three social workers outside my house. And he's hiding under his bed. This is a 15-year-old kid, scared to death, hiding under his bed. So I told Josh to get her stuff.
Excuse me. So hold on. I let's just clarify a couple things. At this point, 15-year-old Austin is home. He's being homeschooled.
No, not Austin. Not Austin. Josh is my 15-year-old.
Josh. Okay, I got it. Okay, that's what I wanted to clarify. And were you paying for these visits?
No. They tried to charge me child support, though.
Okay.
That didn't work out too well in their favor.
Okay, go ahead. I'm sorry.
It's okay. So, Josh, like I said, Josh is on the phone. He's telling me what's going on. So I told him to get the backpack and pack me some clothes. And I told him how to get my things for certain areas so that he could get things.
Mm-hmm.
And so he gathered up everything I told him to, including I told him to get socks, underwear, shoes, jacket, sweatshirts, long sleeve shirts. I don't know where we're going, but we'll get this stuff. So I get here, and I just drove by the street, and we had my whole house surrounded, except for in the yard. They were outside in the street. And there was a SWAT team, and there was freaking people galore out there. So I decided to go to the apartments behind my house, because there's a brick wall, and I pull in there, and I kept watching to see where the CPS and the police were, and I finally got a break, and I jumped the fence. And I came in. I have a door in the very back. You can't see it. And I came in, and I got everything gathered up that we needed, and I put my son, right when he got breaks, I threw him over and all his belongings, and we went on the run for 4 months. So in the meantime, my cousins get put in idle, because, I'm not only having to deal with them, but I'm dealing with them trying to take my biological child away from me.
Okay, so hold on. So at this point, you're halfway through the 30 days visiting Austin and Cheyenne, and then you get pulled away from the visit. You only had a couple weeks left before CPS was going to have to return the children. And Josh is not involved in this case whatsoever, and the supervised visitor inquired where your son was, and then shortly after, you get a call from Josh about the SWAT team at your house. Now, here's the thing. You had to go on the run for 4 months. Obviously,
yes, ma'am.
Obviously that affected the getting the kids back, because you would have only had to wait for 2 weeks longer. So you go on the run. How did that affect you getting custody of the kids?
Well, they knew that the mother was not capable of making legal decisions, and they went ahead and had the mother sever my guardianship. She didn't want to. They done it by force.
Wait. They leveraged the biological mother to sever the guardianship?
Yep.
Wow.
The biological mother didn't want to. She wanted to leave the kids with me. I have written a statement from her statement just where she wanted the kids to be.
You know what? Now, this right here is the abuse of power and manipulation that we try to focus on. This is the complete power mongering and abusive power that these people display to gain control over these kids and divide families in order to get them into care. And I would be interested in knowing two things. One, what were the grounds that justified a SWAT team to show up at your house? And two, how did the judge respond to this social worker bringing SWAT into your house? Because, I mean, you have to make up a pretty damn big story to justify the expense of the local police department dispersing a SWAT team.
Okay, let me, now mind you, I'm sending a visit, right? When this all started to happen, when this all escalated like this is, I'm sending a visit. Well, I also called Pat when I hit the road with my son, because now I have to run with my own biological child because I'm worried for his safety. I contact my attorney. I tell my attorney what's going on, but let me do some digging. So about 3 days later, he calls me up and he said, they're saying you threatened to kill your kid.
Who called you and said that?
My attorney did.
What? Okay, here we go. Now they try to leverage you by saying you are a danger to the children. This is so consistent across the board. And that's what we're doing. Anybody who's listening, pay attention to these stories. You're going to start to see the method of operation start to reveal itself. Go ahead, Ryan.
So, you know, like I said, we hit the road. I went all the way to Florida. My wife has family in Florida. And I went all the way to Florida. It only took me exactly 32 hours to make Florida. No less than that. I was gone. You are not touching my baby. You know, they already have two of my babies in custody. And I'm going to be very clear with the audience that, you know, I'm the one who is protecting these kids. This has been an uphill battle. You know, I'm not, you know, the trauma of the mother abusing them and me having to jump in. You know, now GPS is abusing them, and now coming after them.
And the most heartbreaking thing about this is that those kids coming from a biological mother like that, and then going into your care where they were feeling nurtured and their medical needs were being addressed, and, you know, they were getting glasses and, you know, their teeth are getting, and you know, this for a human being makes them feel better. It boosts confidence. And those children bonded with you because they felt nurtured and they formed a psychological bond with you. And this is so tyrannical what they've done, and that this is such an abuse of power that's so damaging to these children.
Oh, yeah, it's very damaging. Not only has it damaged them, but it damaged me. You know, I'm a high-functioning autistic person, but I have therapists that, in fact, I would like to read you statements that my personal therapist that I was with for 8 years and a case manager that I had been around for 8 years that has known me for a long period said about me, and they wrote these to the courts. And, you know, it's very, for me, you know, this is who I am. And the statements I'm going to read you from them is exactly who I am. It says, what do professionals say about Ryan's ability to parent? Danette, MD, 2409. Ryan is very competent as a parent to take care of the needs of the children in his custody. Susan G. Rivers, and this is a therapist that I've been with for about 8 years at this point. Ryan is a high-functioning, creative, intelligent, caring individual. He has made steady progress in therapy. As with many of my clients, Ryan suffers from PTSD as a result of his childhood experiences. In my opinion, Ryan has demonstrated demonstrated. I mean, consistent, loving, attentive, nurturing parenting skills, not only to his children, but to these children, Cheyenne and Austin, who have been without these vital components for such a long time. In my presence, the children have been extremely responsive to him, and there is a mutual bonding between both children with him, but even more so with Austin. I believe Ryan to be a capable, consistent parent who actively protects his children and his young cousins, Austin and Cheyenne.
So, I have a question.
The GPS just ignores it.
Where?
They just ignored.
When they... Okay, so Austin has Asperger's. Which is, you know, if for anybody that doesn't understand autism, it's a spectrum. It's individual to each person. You will not find two people alike. That's why they call it a spectrum. However, you having high functioning autism would have been the perfect provider for that child. And did they take into consideration when they placed him? Is he with someone who's competent as far as providing for a child with autism?
No, the foster family had no clue how to deal with it, and I actually sat in the waiting room at CPS's office and explained to him how to care for him and how to be very clear with him, because having autism, and I'm on the high spectrum part of it, is when people talk to an autistic person of high functioning, you have to be clear, and sometimes you have to dummy it down so we get it. And Austin was struggling because he wasn't getting the consistency of someone being very clear-cut. Like, when he would act out, I would go in, and I would just wrap my arms around him and hold him real tight, and I would walk him, and I would sit there and just cry with him. Let him cry, and I would cry with him because my heart was hurting for him. You know what I'm saying? And I wanted him to know that somebody was there for him.
Oh, yeah, but in the visitation atmosphere or around CPS, they use the grief that families are experiencing from this assault on their family and the separation. And they literally, what people are experiencing is the psychological bond between caregiver and parent being shattered. And that half the time, no, what am I saying? The majority of the time, they use this as a way of saying that the visits are unhealthy to the child.
You'll like this one. So, and I've looked over a lot of CPS cases over the 8 years, and Enmesh is so loosely used with CPS. They said that me and all my children were enmeshed.
I know this term well.
We talk alike, we walk alike, everything we do, if you look at the boys in my family, we're all alike.
Now wait a minute. Did CPS say you were too enmeshed?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because my 15-year-old son who has Asperger's, let me go forwards a little bit so we're up.
But hold on, let's break this down because again, this is about giving the audience the ability to see the correlation of how they sever families, too enmeshed is a lead-in to the vast amount of Munchausen by proxy or narcissistic personality traits that the courts are fabricating in order to make a parent or render a parent a danger and rule out a positive role model and good caretaker to children. And the reason I'm pointing this out before we get too far along is that your attorney did get a call from CPS saying that you were trying to harm the children. So there's the correlation, guys. But hold on. Again, before we get any further, I really do want to go back and have you talk about what was the judge's response to them sending out a SWAT team when he clearly told these people, "This, you don't have any evidence. return these children. You have 30 days. And 2 weeks later, they have a SWAT team on your door for a child that's not involved in this case.
What they ended up pulling in the process of all that is getting my 80 cousin's mom to get rid of my guardianship. So after that, I was dismissed as a party. Even though the mother was not mentally capable of making these decisions, and it was proven through psychological evals and all kinds of other stuff. In fact, the state of Delaware made her go under a full hysterectomy so she couldn't have any children.
Okay, but again, did you ever find out what the judge said about this event?
No, I tried to get the transcripts from the court case up to the point where I was. And they sealed them up so I couldn't even get access up to that point.
There you go again. Because they ruled you out, they dismissed you as a party so you could no longer have access to the records to find out anything. And there you go, ladies and gentlemen. A person who is fighting for children, loving these children, who the children want to be with, who the children feel safe with, has now been ruled out. Out of the picture. Pushed out of the picture.
I was forced out.
You were forced out.
I was forced out under threats and intimidation.
Absolutely. Now, here's the thing, because we want to move this story along. Okay, so now you're out of the picture, and let's go to the point where you are on the run for 4 months. Clearly, you're probably having anxiety, because you know that, as soon as you got on the road, in 2 weeks... I'm sure you didn't mean to be on the road for 4 months. I'm sure you wanted to be right back as soon as that 30-day mark hit. Go home, get the kids, and move on with your life, right?
I did.
Okay, so let's...
Me and my son struggled. Both of us struggled for 4 months.
Okay, so now let's flash forward to the end of the 4 months. After you were in hiding, okay. What event led to you making the decision to no longer be on the run?
I was missing my family. I missed my wife, I missed my stepkids, I missed my nieces, I missed my nephews, I missed my family, I really did, and it was very hard, because for 4 months you're on the run because you're so afraid they're going to hurt your child, and CPS has a notorious thing of hurting children, and I wanted to come home. I needed to be with my family. I needed to be with my support system. I need to be with people that love me. My son needed it too. He needed stability again because, you're bouncing from state to state, couch to couch, hotel to hotel, truck stop, rest stop. For 4 months, it's hard. It's hard. It's very hard to do that. And then you watch your son, because he knows what's going on. He's not stupid. He's 15 years old. And, he's crying because, his cousins are gone. And then you got to try to stay strong for your kids because your kids are struggling. And I really needed to go home to my family.
So, okay. So you get home. Is there any repercussions or harassment that began from... basically the SWAT team or those three CPS workers or this that started all this?
Galvin.
Yeah, who started all this mess and basically destroyed these children on just what seemed to be just
over it. She's actually a main supervisor, the head supervisor. She got a promotion over all of this.
And again, the CPS workers are getting bonuses and promotions based on how many kids they take into care. And if you're following this podcast, you know that we just did an interview with a woman yesterday that referenced a book, and we're going to be reaching out to that author, and we're going to be getting him to come on and talk about this experience. And that is from a former CPS worker. So that book is written by an insider, ladies and gentlemen. This is not from parents. This is not hypotheticals. There are very courageous people in CPS that are trying to break the stories of how this organization is running and how it's not acting in the best interest of the families, and actually how they are trained with these methods of operation to sever families. And destroy the psychological bond between parent, caregiver, and child, because that conditions the child to stop wanting to come home, to stop asking, to lose hope. And that is a assault on the human, basic human rights of a child. Now, let's just focus here. So a couple things. No, you still don't have any transcripts, and you still don't know what the judge's response was, right? And let's go back, because I'm very curious about whether or not they came at you when they found out you returned home. I'm curious if they came at you again with SWAT team. Did they come back after Josh? What happened when you returned home?
Okay, so we get home, and I had a 16-year-old stepdaughter at the time. And my 16-year-old stepdaughter was having an 18-year-old guy sneak in my house, and they were doing the nasties in my house. So I went and put, I know the window shut. I won't lie to you, I know the window shut. So, and I put the deadbolts on my lock because she was sneaking in and out of the house. You know, this is a 16-year-old kid, and she knew that, you know, everything that we had just gone through, she knew. And so she just kept pushing the bar. And so I grew up one day. I blew up on her. I didn't hit her or anything. I just blew up and yelled at her. So she went to school, and her boyfriend and her, she told her boyfriend that she just said, I threatened to kill everybody in the house. That was a long time ago. And so he went to the school counselor and told him I threatened to kill everybody in the house, which I did not. So once again, we have CPS, and CPS already knew not to show up at my house. So the detective calls my girlfriend, and my girlfriend called me, and she has me call the detective, and the detective said he just wants to talk to Josh, and that Josh can stay home, blah, blah, blah. I was coerced by the detective at the time, and he came to the house, and I said, you can talk to him here, and he goes, well, my supervisor says I can't do that. I got to take him in, and, you know, because we got to video it, and I said, no, you can talk to him here. And my girlfriend's all, just let him go, and my gut's telling me no. But my girlfriend's all like, it'll be okay, and he agreed to let my girlfriend go with. Well, they get to the halfway to the building for the interview, and they dump my girlfriend out on the side of the road.
What?
5 miles away from, yeah, they dumped her out on the side of the road. So they're taking custody of him, and she can find her own way home.
Oh, my, I'm sorry, I'm in shock. No court proceeding. But wait, no court proceeding. No trial. Nothing.
They then served me with temporary custody orders on Josh.
Wait a minute, but after they took him?
Yep.
Ladies and gentlemen, that is an abduction. That is an abduction by a Mesa Police Department detective.
No, I'm telling you the truth. My girlfriend, if you want, you can do an interview with her on another day, but she'll tell you the same thing. They took her with for the interview because I didn't want to let him go by himself. I was scared for him, you know, because we just got done from being on the run. I was very scared.
How long after, hold on, let's slow down. You got to let me talk a little, okay? I know, you know, it's a stressful situation. Here's the thing. They take him. No, they abducted him. And
they abducted him. They kidnapped my child.
They took him. How long after they took him did they serve you paperwork to say he was in custody?
About 20 minutes later.
Oh, wait. So this is a premeditated plan under the guise of lies to where they coerced you into allowing the child to go. This is ridiculous.
Yep. That's exactly what they did.
Well, I have to tell you, coercion, that's a crime. Anything.
The cop pulled his gun on me, too.
When did he pull the gun on you?
When I tried to go out, when he served me with the paperwork, and I tried to go out, and then he tried to slam me in handcuffs, and I backed up in my yard and told him to get up and work. my cousin was here at the house, and my cousin stepped out, and he goes, you know that it's against the law to do what you're doing.
Wait a minute. Hold on. Slow down. Let's break this down, because we know you know the story, but we got to break it down for everybody who's never heard this before, okay? So your girlfriend and your son, Josh, are in a vehicle, and you think he's going for just a basic interview, and girlfriend is with him, and everything's fine. 20 minutes later, after they're gone, you get served paper, but that's by another Mesa Police Department?
No, that's by the same officer.
So wait a minute, I'm confused. If he's on the road heading towards the station to interview...
Him and his partner came out, and they had two different cars, and they loaded him up, loaded my son and my girlfriend up in her car, his partner's car. And next thing I know, it was just me and him at the gate, and somebody walks up, another squad car pulls up, and I knew once they had that envelope that they were taking my kid.
That's what I was trying to get out of you. That's what I was trying to focus on. So two cop cars showed up. Josh and your girlfriend went with one, and another one stayed, or they both left and one returned?
No, one of them stayed.
Okay, so the other one stayed, and they wait 20 minutes, which is clearly giving the other guy time to get Josh down the road, and he serves you the paperwork. At what point did you have a firearm pulled on you?
Right after they served it, because I tried to go out the gate with my keys to get in my vehicle to go after my kid. Because that wasn't a warrant. That wasn't legal. You can't take my child without a warrant. And I kept telling him that. He's all, you'll have your day in court. That's what the detective said. And when I went to go out the gate, he grabbed me and he tried to shove me in handcuffs. And at my house, we have a gate. And I quickly turned around and I slammed his arm in the gate. And I said, get a fucking warrant to arrest me.
I don't even have to ask. He just tried to put cuffs on you, not Mirandize you, right?
Nope, nothing. Then I come to find out from him that he was supposed to take me in for a psychological eval per CPS.
There we go. There we go, people. Okay, CPS, Department of Social Services, is abusing the... profession of psychology, and you need to know that they are in control of which psychologists they are picking, and we are going to be showing you how these psychologists load of money as independent government contractors with the court. This is basically, I'm sorry, it's designed like a legal organized crime unit designed to get these children at all cost. And families are not standing a chance against this organization. And that is all we're trying to do. Again, Ryan and I are just talking under the First Amendment. We're just breaking this down. We're just two people talking, and this is all opinion, and you don't have to agree with us. And again, anybody involved in this case, we believe in fair and balanced journalism. Please go to the justicespeaksup.us site, send me an email. I am happy to talk to you. I encourage it. I want to talk to you. I want everybody to reach out, because, you know, you're part of this story. You're the other side of it. And we want your side heard too. But clearly what is happening is illegal. It's coercion. It's actually a RICO Act violation. It's abduction, and at the hands of our paid servants. And this, your tax dollars is funding this. So that's what we need to have people understand. Your tax dollars are paying for families to be harassed and become broken people, and children being literally kidnapped.
Correct.
Okay. So let's move the story along. So clearly Josh is gone. When's the first time you see him after they take him? How much time goes by?
6 months.
Did they move him more than 100 miles away or outside of the county when they took him?
He was still in the same county, but they moved him clean across He was in Peoria, and I was in Mesa.
Okay, so
and he moved
six
into another city.
Okay, so this is ridiculous. Okay, so real quick, was there any legal proceedings over those 6 months, or was it a solid 6 months that went by that you didn't see your kid?
No, we had a TPR over the phone. He just told the judge they feared for their safety because I called up twice. And actually three times in less than a year, three different times.
But wait a minute. Okay, listen. But again, I just want people to listen. You are clearly hearing what this really is. Let's just call a spade a spade. The people who kidnapped Josh are saying that the parent is a danger.
Exactly. They said I was a danger to him. But in the interview, in his police interview and in the CPS interview.
Hold on. You're a danger, but two cops showing up and leading a child to believe that he's going to be coming home, you think he would? That child knew he was kidnapped.
Yep, he knew. He kept telling him he wanted to go home the whole time.
Okay, I'm sorry. I know that we're just all over the place, so let's try to reel it in because I'm just in shock right now.
So let me go to what CPS said about Josh in your report, and this is police too that made sure that CPS put it in there, right? It says, does Josh accuse Ryan of abuse? All statements by Josh refute that he fears Ryan or has been abused by him anyway. One statement was made by Joshua while living in grandmother's house. Joshua feared telling what was happening because she would get in trouble. Since the grandmother and boyfriend were the abusers, it is more likely that Joshua feared them and not Ryan.
Complete manipulation. Now, here's the funny thing, Ryan, okay? You know, we're getting ready to do the next podcast is with a young girl that's been raped and pretty much being held hostage and sequestered away from social justice advocates, anybody that can help this girl. And she has been for 8 months, no, excuse me, a year, begging the CPS to get her help to investigate this crime. And it wasn't until they knew JSU stepped in that they actually sent a detective out a year later after the forensic evidence is gone to pretty much go through the steps and, you know, yeah, let's go talk to the girl. Let's document we did something finally. But they are saying that she's recanted, that she's not telling the truth, that, you know, they tried to label her with some kind of bullshit psychological something other. But yet over here, you have a child who has been kidnapped, and now they're showing that you're a danger. That's just crazy. It pretty much they're allowed to do whatever they want to do, whatever serves their needs, whatever continues to give them control over that child. Okay, so let's move back to Josh. Okay, so is Josh in your care now? Well, Josh is 22 now.
He's 23.
Okay, so Josh is 20. Josh is 23 now. Did he age out? Did they keep him for the whole time until he was 18?
No, they returned him 6 months before he turned 18.
And how did you get him back?
I fought every breath that I had. I fought for him. I wasn't backing down.
Okay, now
the CPS news, they kept calling me every day. The CPS worker that was on my case, her name's Gail Olson McJosh, she kept calling me every day threatening to sever my rights to him.
Of a kidnapped child.
That's emotional terrorism. Yeah, over Josh. That I never did anything to any of these kids, and yet I'm being treated like I'm a freaking terrorist or something.
Ryan, listen to me. I encourage everybody right now, as you're listening to this, pull out your phone and Google the U.S. Patriot Act. kidnapping is a violation of the U.S. Patriot Act, and it's 25-year sentence. It's a federal crime. And
I thought that I lived in the United States. I thought I was free. I thought my children were safe. I thought that, you know, that they had to give me warrants to do anything. I didn't know that they could just capture your children and, you know, abduct them and then put them in prison. They're not tried of a crime, and they put them in prison. They put my 23-year-old son in a group home where he was abused. I have a report where I called the police and the CPS. CPS did the investigation on the group home. The group home, all 10 kids in the group home said they were being abused. They were placing bets on the kids, money bets on the kids. And the kid that lost got restrained and beat up even more.
Now, wait a minute. They were placing bets on what? Because the kids were fighting and they were betting on who would win?
Yep.
So, okay. Here's the thing. So, at what age did he get assaulted after they kidnapped him and put him in the foster prison? The group home.
The very first time I visited him after 6 months, I had a face-to-face visit with him. He had bite marks and bruises all over him. And I said, Josh, what happened to you? I was shocked. This is my baby. You know what I'm saying? This is my baby. And he never looked like that in my care. He never looked like that in my care. My baby. And I flipped out because it was with the council. I flipped out because when he told me that they were making him fight and putting bets on the kids like they were fucking animals.
Jesus Christ.
They're not animals, they're children. And I felt so bad because I couldn't protect him at all. I can't protect any of this. And CPS was mad against me too. Then I called the cops and CPS on CPS. I didn't do anything and my baby gets hurt in their custody and I have a report. The counselor said I was emotionally unstable when I found out that my son was being abused in his group home.
Your child was kidnapped. The other ones have been constructively stolen from you. And you know what? You have every right to be angry, broken, and exactly what you are. And there is not a damn thing wrong with that. Because just because they're heartless with no regard for human life doesn't mean you have to be that way.
The CPS worker kept telling me that my son was lying to me. My son didn't lie about that stuff. He would not lie about that.
That's what they do. Any child who's old enough to witness or document or report, they don't want that out. And the problem is, people, if you are listening, there's nowhere for these families to go. Are you listening? The police are helping. There's a serious problem in our society, and I'm begging the UN to step in and conduct an investigation of human rights violations against these families who are being domestically terrorized by a broken system. I'm begging you to assist these families. I'm begging people to literally go to our GoFundMe. These families have been financially broken. These cases are being dragged out. These families need therapy. They need legal defense funds. And that's what we are trying to do. This documentary, this podcast is our efforts to raise funding to assist these families, to reunify them, to assist them in becoming whole people, to overcome this crime-based trauma. These individuals need to be held accountable. This is not okay. And I'm perfectly okay to be the person to sit there and put this on a podcast and say, you're not going to get away with this anymore. You do not have the right. You are paid from our tax dollars. Our taxpayers will no longer fund your kidnapping and abuse of children. This story is horrific. So you get Josh back, okay?
Well, no, there's more to it. There's more to what was going on in the group home.
There's more?
So my there's more. My son ended up with a broken arm in the group home. My son, while I was on, I got phone calls with my son, unsupervised phone calls. And there was one call that I called in, and there I heard a little boy screaming in the background, get off me, you're hurting me. And I'm bleeding, I'm bleeding. And the group home staff members would just kick his head into the tile floor. My son told me that on the phone. And I said, I told Josh, I asked Josh, I said, Josh, do they do this a lot, you know? And he goes, all the time. And then he's on the phone with me, and they're screaming and yelling at them. And I said, oh, hell no, to my son. I said, you put whoever screaming at you on that phone. So they put the group home staff members on the phone. And I said, I'm going to tell you what, you ever cuss my child out again, you ever scream and yell at my child, and I will find out where you live and ask. They told him that I didn't love him, that I was emotionally abusing him because I was transgendered. Oh, no, it gets bad. They discriminated. The AG of the state of Arizona discriminated against me, saying that because I was transgendered, I couldn't teach my son to be a man.
He didn't.
Yes, he did. He did it. I have a master's degree level therapist that will testify in a court of law. That is exactly what he pulled.
Okay.
My son was sitting right there in that room. The attorney that I had was right there in that room. My case manager was there. Not the CPS case manager. I had another case manager because of my Asperger's. That was there.
Hey, to all of our lovely transgender LGBT activist community, why don't you go ahead and give the Arizona Attorney General a call and give him a piece of your mind? We'll be posting the number on the blog post. It's time everybody speaks up.
They flat out told me that I couldn't be a parent because I'm transgender. Because in the meeting, they deteriorated my son. And this is what the turning point in my case was. I definitely on this podcast would like to give Gloria Russell a big shout out. She's a Christian therapist who believed in me. Without her, I would never have gotten my son back. I owe her more than I can give her. I feel like I owe her my life because she brought home one of my kids. She fought for me the whole way.
Well, Gloria,
she was just a God-sent lady.
Gloria, if you're listening, I'd like you to contact me through the JusticeSpeaksUp.us website. I would love to hear your point of view on this because we need more people like you. Definitely need more people like you.
She, in that meeting where they discriminated against me, they were referring, my son is sitting in the room, right beside me, and they kept referring to Josh like he was an item, like, you know, like a teapot. They kept going, the child this, the child that, and I had enough. 18 months into my case, I had enough, because they cut me off from face-to-face visits. And so I went 6 months without seeing him. I saw him only a couple times in between, and then I went another long period without seeing him, almost another year. And I had enough of that, them talking down to my son. I had enough of them just being disrespectful to him, you know? It was just complete disrespectfulness. And I stood up in there and I said, you know, the child has a name. The child is loved. The child is cared for. You are imprisoning my child. You are imprisoning my son. The gift that God gave me. Josh is a gift. I am O negative with the Rh factor. And I almost lost Josh. He's my only son. And I fought through my pregnancy to have him. Now, I'm a mom. They can say whatever they want. I'm still a mom. God gave me this baby. He knew I could do it. And Josh has always been a gift. And in my heart, I know God named Josh. My son's name is Joshua Fabian. It means Jehovah saves a man of understanding. He's been everything I wanted in my mom. When I was carrying Josh, my mom wanted me to board him, and I wouldn't do it. I fought through the pregnancy. I fought through him having sleep apnea and almost losing him.
You know what? There's this bias that is occurring in family court towards lesbian couples, homosexual couples, and transgender parents, and it's wrong. And here's how I feel about this. If you're in this line of work, you need to be focusing on what's in the best interest of children and not what happens in people's bedrooms. A person's sexual orientation or sexual preferences is private. And unless the judges and court officers and CPS workers want to talk about their kinks, and they need to sit down and go shut up in the corner. That's how I feel about it. It's wrong. It shouldn't even be on the radar. And the fact that an attorney general would say that to you, well, here's what I have to say to that attorney general. Sir, you didn't think Ryan was good enough to lead, be an example for Ryan. So, I mean, for Ryan's son. So to you, I'd have to say, I don't think you're a good example of how the law should run. Maybe you don't deserve the office you're in. And again, I'm pushing for people who are doing this to be out of office. Please leave office. You don't need to be there. Because you do not represent the American culture at all. We have a constitution, and there are rights in there. The basic constitutional rights you are violating while taking a check from taxpayers to provide and protect our interests, and you're not doing it. So again, real quick, everybody, I will be posting the Mesa, the Attorney General for Arizona. Give him a call. Give him a piece of your mind. Let him know how you feel about this story. So let's go back to the kids, okay? Because we're pushing over an hour here, but
the other thing I would like you know, your viewers to know, because there is a gay and lesbian law firm that's supposed to help when your civil rights are violated, which in my case you can see a lot of civil rights were violated. And I reached out to him to let him to legal, and even though I filled out everything I was supposed to, cross the T's and dotted the I's, they still did not help me. I was on my own.
Who is that law firm?
Lambda Legal.
What is it?
Lambda Legal. They're gay, lesbian, transgender legal department for civil rights violations on the LGBT community.
Why did they not take your case?
I don't know. During all the cases that I, both cases, I kept contacting them and telling them what was going on. And I gave them written statements about what was going on and that my girlfriend, you know, was going through it too. And we had witnesses to this, and they still didn't help. My constitutional rights were completely trampled on.
Wow. So, here's the thing.
The GLBT community doesn't even help their own people.
Well, guess what? I've been underground since January, and don't feel bad. The journalism community isn't quite, well, never mind. We'll move on. So, I just want to go, as we try to go, we're going to run this over 20 minutes, guys. This is going to be more than an hour because I want to hear this story. And I know you guys all do too. Let's go and talk about what is happening with the little ones. Because you haven't...
Cheyenne is up for adoption in Arizona. I'm not too sure where Austin is right now.
How long has it been since you've seen them?
8 years.
Whoa.
Eight, oh,
How old are they now?
They are 12 and 15 now. And if for some reason, by chance, that they hear it, I want them to know that their Uncle Ryan loves them with all his heart. I love you guys. I miss you. I'm sorry you're going through this. I'm sorry that you guys had to suffer what they're doing to you. If I could save you, I would. I would save you. I'm sorry, guys. I did my best. I love you guys so much. I love you. I miss you guys so much. I miss you a lot. I miss you guys. I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. I love you guys.
Ryan, you did.
Yes, ma'am.
You did. You did really good by those kids.
I love them so much, guys. I love them. I would never hurt them. I just want them back home where I know they're safe. Where I can love them and I can help them heal, because I'm not going to heal until my family comes home.
Hey guys, anybody who's listening to this podcast, I'm asking you to please contact us at Justice Speaks Up to assist Ryan with getting Cheyenne and Austin back home. Because guess what? When you have a love for a child, it doesn't matter if 8 minutes has gone by or 8 years. I can tell you, Ryan will bring these kids home to Ryan, and he will take care of these children. And he already licked their wounds once and got them back on track. And you have heard directly from someone, a therapist who is working with him. This is a good man and a good father whose multiple rights were violated, and these children. And, you know, help him get reunited with these children. Bring these children home to him.
Just bring my babies home.
Ryan,
please, somebody help me bring them home. They don't deserve this. They didn't do anything wrong, and I didn't do anything wrong. Just bring them home, please.
Ryan, I'm gonna tell you this. We're gonna continue to advocate for you, and we're gonna continue to try and find resources for you, and you have my personal cell number, and anytime you want to call me, my phone is open to you, available 24/7. Okay?
Yes, ma'am.
And, okay, on that note, before I burst into tears, Ryan, thank you. I'm going to call you after we sign off. And thank you, everyone, for listening. And real quick, I'd like to thank all of our sponsors and endorsers, including the World Film Institute and Soldier Fit and Simple Life of Luxury and the many people that are supporting this project. And, you know, we love feedback. And anybody who would like to contact Ryan from the LGBT community and offer this family support, you can email me through the Justice Speaks Up site, and I will make sure that you are in touch with him. I'm Archer Sierra, and Ryan, thank you for joining us, and everybody, we'll catch you on the next episode.
This has been brought to you by Drown Rat Productions. Remember, we are everywhere and nowhere.
podcast you just heard was recorded with Anchor. If you want to make your own, download the Android or iOS app completely free from anchor.fm/podcast. That's anchor.fm/podcast.